In today's episode, leadership expert Rosie Connor joins us to discuss her innovative approach to messy leadership and shares insights from her extensive career in educational leadership development and coaching. Stay tuned. Welcome to Well-Led Schools with Adrienne Hornby. On this podcast, we talk about all things staff well-being, school culture, and leadership. Join me for incredible and rich conversations with a range of experts who will give you tips, tricks, and inspiration to best support the well-being of the staff in your school and yourself. I'm your host, Adrienne Hornby, a health and well-being consultant and former school leader. I partner with schools across Australia to tailor and embed staff well-being action plans aimed at addressing staff burnout and building positive working environments. This episode is brought to you by our signature Well-Led Schools Partnerships, a 12-month program that brings leaders and staff together to create a shared vision for their school and empowers them to create an action plan that leads to needle-moving changes in school culture and morale. Doors to our partnerships open only once per term. Stay updated on program openings and sign up for the waitlist at adriennehornby.com.au/school-partnerships. Welcome to another episode of the Well-Led Schools podcast, where we explore the best practices, insights, and experiences from some of the most innovative and effective leaders in education today. I'm thrilled to introduce our next guest for this episode, Rosie Connor. Rosie is an expert in leadership development with over 20 years of experience. Her passion lies in supporting education and not-for-profit leaders to excel in their roles. Rosie's extensive background includes partnership with education departments, school networks, not-for-profits, and professional associations across four continents, bringing a wealth of knowledge and unique insights into the leadership mindsets required for leaders at all levels. Rosie is also the founder of BTS Spark, a not-for-profit initiative dedicated to providing affordable and targeted leadership development and coaching specifically tailored for educational leaders. In today's episode, we'll dive into Rosie's book, Messy Leadership, which she co-authored with Alyssa Gallagher. MESSY is an acronym for meaning making, emotional connection, seeing the future, seizing momentum, and your presence. The book is a culmination of insights drawn from coaching over 20,000 school leaders, revealing really practical strategies to help leaders thrive in a volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous environment. We'll explore the concept of messy leadership, discuss the challenges Rosie has faced throughout her career, and uncover practical tips for creating a trusting team culture. We'll also look into the importance of coaching in leadership and how leaders can start embracing messy leadership today. So without further ado, let's welcome Rosie Connor to the Well-Led Schools podcast. Thank you so much for joining me today, Rosie. I was fangirling before we hit record. I'm really excited to have you on to talk about your insights and all of your wisdom and knowledge. So thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm really looking forward to the discussion.
Yeah. Rosie, I always start off with this question. It's an important one because it always gets a different answer. But what's one thing that you like to do to look after or support your health or your well-being?
Oh, wow. So I'm a rule breaker. So if I can have three quick things. I do some meditation and find that really helps to center me at the beginning of the day. I enjoy biking, so a bit of physical exercise is always a good thing for me. And I love chocolate. So if I'm doing something difficult, I stage the chocolate treats to keep me going.
Oh, gosh, I love all of those things. We've just recently got ourselves. It's cheating a little bit, some e-bikes up here on the Gold Coast, but the all the rage with the young people are these fat tired e-bikes. So my husband and I now have one each with our children very safely on the back of them, and we've really joined in the Gold Coast lifestyle with our bikes. So I'm with you there. It's just so much fun getting outside in the sunshine whilst moving our body, but as a family outing.
Yeah, I love the wind through my hair.
That's amazing. Rosie, can you please tell the audience a little bit about who you are, what you do, and your journey to where you are today?
Gosh. So my journey in educational leadership started 25 years ago. You can tell from the accent I'm a POM. So I was in England at the time, and I was invited to lead one of the Tony Blair education reform programs. It was called an Education Action Zone, and it brought together 19 schools that had been failed by the school inspectors, and I was asked to lead this group. So you can imagine bringing together those 19 schools and the 19 principals. Initially, it was quite awkward because everybody felt like they were in a club of losers. And what we did is some really lovely work over a period of years to turn everyone's expectations around, their sense of themselves and their role in leading their schools. The teachers received a lot of coaching. And we really managed to work with all of the staff and the leaders within those schools to transform those schools over a period of time. So much so that by the end, schools outside of the Education Action Zone were asking to join in this club, because they could see that there was some really strong, innovative school improvement work going on. So I love that with a passion. And that's that really was the beginning of my history with supporting school leaders to do their best work. And that's really been the thread throughout my various roles. I was invited by AITSL to help them launch their principal standard back in 2013. And then for the last decade, I've been focusing on how to support school leaders to maximize and unlock their leadership potential through coaching. And that's the work of BTS Spark, of course.
Oh, amazing. And how wonderful. I mean, it sounds initially like that group was a real intervention model. But then you had all of those schools who were outside of that, who were looking to come to you for enhancement. And there's always such a diverse range of people who will look for coaching and consulting when it comes to leadership in their school. It doesn't just have to be from an intervention or an early intervention standpoint. It can be that prevention or that culture enhancement. So that's how wonderful that you've had such a diverse range of clientele to work with and learn from over the years.
Yeah, that's been very rich. And I think how you summarized that was around bringing a sense of agency, I guess, of personal agency, and then collective efficacy into those schools was the key ingredient there.
Yeah. And when you talk about transforming schools, it sounds like you worked in these projects for a really long time. You know, being realistic for some of those leaders who might be listening, or even staff who think, oh, our school needs a transformation when it comes to wellbeing or culture or even leadership, what do you think is a realistic time frame to expect a transformation? I'm gonna say maybe from the angle first of those schools who might be looking for that intervention or early intervention.
So in the business of coaching, of course, we work with personal transformations, and then when we're working with a number of individuals in a school, then that's looking at culture shift and then transforming the schools. But to start individuals on their personal transformation, that can be quite quick. That's a matter of months with maybe a coaching session every 3 weeks or so. So that can really start to shift individuals. And of course, if you're working with the school leader who has a lot of responsibility, then that can start to shift culture quite quickly. But to achieve a real school transformation, of course, that's a matter of years. Mm. Suggest 3 to 5 years would be a realistic time scale.
It's funny, I was once, I went away on a conference with a group of principals who hired me to come and talk about wellbeing through COVID. And we were sitting around on one night having dinner, and I talked about how the change process really takes around 5 years. That's what the research says with most things. And he just burst out laughing and he said, I've been a principal for a number of decades. It's more like 10 years at a minimum. And I was like, well, hang on. It depends on what you're trying to move. But I understand that you've always got a shift in staff, a change in priorities. The directorates or the education officers put something down. But I loved what you talked about then there around the individual changes with leaders. And I'll often say that when I'm in schools as well is, yes, it's a bit harder to move us all collectively straight away. But what you're doing in your team or with individual staff or your place and space in the school can have a real impact really fast. And yes, the end goal, a part of that vision is to get us all unified as a team with some consistency around our approaches or, you know, how we address if I'm thinking about wellbeing and culture, but never to throw away that and that in your team you can make a really big difference as a middle leader or a senior leader, but in particular some of those middle leaders who are listening. And that power of coaching, like what you were talking about, it's really valuable there.
For sure. Wouldn't underestimate the impact that people have, this well, the impact that a principal can have on a school. And just that moving a shift of a principal can increase the average reading age of every child in the school on average by 3 or 4 months. So that is really significant.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you go from one school to another and can feel the difference in the principals. And I get really excited, as probably you do, when you have a principal who engages with somebody like you or I to make a shift in their school. You think, okay, when the principal is really on board and they're really committed, you know that you're going to start seeing some whole school results really quickly. Great. So how, Rosie, have you evolved since your first appointment in a school leadership position?
Well, I think I'm still very much a work in progress, to be honest. But one thing I have started to do or tried to do over the years is to slow down. And that's been personally a challenge for me. So I've always wanted to really drive change forward and to do the best we can possibly do as a team and as an organization and have the greatest impact, because BTS Spark is a not-for-profit. And what I've realized is that that's all very, very noble and ambitious, but you can only go as fast as the people around you. So I do try and remind myself of that and slow down and just make sure that everyone's involved and on board and we're going at an appropriate pace.
How is that different now to I guess once upon a time? Would you reflect that the leader that you once were would be all steam ahead, charging along and potentially leaving people behind or not involving them? How has that become part of your focus? Is it you know, through a lesson that you'd learn?
I mean, for sure, I've matured. And when I was first working with those failing schools in the education action zone, I was late 20s myself. So I had a few kind of corners that I needed to rub off on myself. And yes, I mean, I think I've always been a big believer in getting feedback. So you can seek feedback from others, then that's given me a bit of a steer as to, that's a good point. I could definitely handle that differently.
Have you always handled feedback well? I only ask because I too believe in feedback. But it's evolved over time. But I mean, I'm still on my journey. It never ends, right? But valuing feedback and absorbing it and doing something with it are two different things. So have you always found it easy to receive, or was it once quite a hard feat?
So I have personally got a bit of coaching on this, and it's interesting you kind of talk about feedback, because feedback we've realized is the number one issue that leaders ask for coaching support on from us in BTS Spark. So feedback is critical. Personally, for me, I try and practice what I preach. So we have some advice that we offer leaders around accepting feedback, which is to look for the grain of truth. Even if it feels unfair, there may be like a 2% in there. That's a gem. And I've tried to be open enough always to look for that 2%. And then just be curious about it. So try and approach feedback, however roughly it might be given or badly handled. Try and view it as a gift.
Mm-hmm.
If you imagine,
I love that.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Been in schools, of course, they need feedback all the time around how could they improve their writing, for example, so that it can get better and better. And we call that assessment as well. But that feedback loop is critical for them and adults and myself. We're just the same. We need feedback.
Yeah, all the time. I talk about when we're looking at the spiral of inquiry, developing a hunch. So how might we be contributing to this situation? And I love that, looking for the grain of truth, because that taking accountability is such an excellent skill to role model. If that's what, and I hear it all the time, our leaders are really wanting that from their staff. And I say, well, how good are you at doing that? Not just to me, in a session like mine, and I'm sure your clients do with you, but how vulnerable are you then with your people to own your accountability in the feedback that's provided and in the hopes then that your staff will reflect that same skill back to you?
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah. Rosie, can you tell the audience about an aspect of leadership that's challenged you most during your career and how did you overcome it?
So looking back, one thing that I've worked on over the years and I've struggled with at times is this idea, which we all know in theory is important, about how do you truly empower your people, empower your team? And how can I delegate and feel comfortable in letting go? So I am a self-confessed control freak and a bit of a perfectionist. And I know that I can do jobs well. I've been in my own organization, BTS Spark, a long time. So this is more about, but I can't do everything. So I need to acknowledge that. I need to recognize that it's actually really important developmentally for others to take on different challenges. And they might do them in a different way, and they might even do them to a different standard sometimes as well. But it's important to be open to that, set some guardrails, of course. And I have got better at that. I've been a bit influenced by the work of Liz Wiseman on multipliers. I don't know how much your audience are familiar with that, but the simple concept is that as a leader, you should be a multiplier of other people's talents. But so many of us, including myself, accidentally diminish the capabilities of others rather than maximizing them or multiplying them. And you can do that not by putting people down, but just by simply, like if I'm always the expert, then people can defer to me in a really unhelpful way. And our coaches are continually needing to support principals and other school leaders with this challenge of moving into a sort of default mode in school where life is really fast and people are coming to them with problems all the time and they're just fixing the problems. They're rescuing these people and they come into a coaching session. Suddenly the school leaders press pause and they go, gosh, I can see it really clearly now. What I'm doing is I'm working at a million miles an hour and I'm just fixing problem by problem by problem by problem rather than supporting the individuals who are coming to me to fix their own problems and guiding them through that. So they're looking at wanting to become more of a multiplier, more of a coach of their team in an informal way.
It's such a great point that you make. And as you were speaking, I was furiously scribbling down some conversations that have come to me in the last couple of weeks around this very issue. And, you know, that kind of leadership style that you're describing of Liz Wiseman, was it? You know, that multiplier, to me, has really close links to that transformational leadership where you're equipping your people with the ability to be able to run successfully, achieve goals, achieve that vision as a unit, as opposed to, you know, that top down or that authoritarian, and which is something that I really strongly advocate for. And it seems like, you know, we're often given the option when working with staff to redirect them or to coach them. And I think to save time, we're constantly redirecting and giving people the instructions, because I think as leaders, we're just trying to help them, as you said, or we're trying to get things done. But it's then causing something which a school leader said to me the other day. She said, I feel like our staff are becoming de-skilled because they're constantly having things done for them or directions given to them, not always just by the school leadership, but by our departments and our education officers as well. And like you said, they're not giving this autonomy to grow, evolve, and build their skills by learning through making mistakes or getting feedback and really growing and evolving as a person. So that's what a great lesson for you to share, because I'm sure so many educators, staff and leaders listening really feel that. And, you know, the perspective to that too is that our leaders often aren't trying to micromanage us or control us. They just want success for whatever the project is, and they can't they don't see themselves having the space or time to allow the people to do what they need to do in order for this not to continue to be a problem for the next project.
Yes, yeah, you're right. It's such a common problem, and it's born out of school leaders with the best intent trying to be helpful.
Yeah. That's one thing I've learned in this role, as you probably do too when you work with leaders and you hear their perspectives, is when you're on one side of it, I used to see leaders very differently to now when I sit with them in sessions, either group sessions or one-on-one, and hear their perspective. And it's brought so much empathy to me that I think, God, I really wish that teachers could be a fly, or educators, staff could be a fly on the wall for these conversations, to hear the vulnerability and the struggle and the stresses of our leaders as well. And they always do. They have the best of intentions for their people. Oh, what a great one. Now, what's really exciting, Rosie, is that you have co-written a truly incredible book that I've had the very honourable privilege of running my eyes over before that it's actually available for purchase, but as you said, it's landed on the dock and the book's called Messy Leadership. Can you share with the audience a little bit about the book, but also what is messy leadership?
For sure. So there's a little bit of a story behind this, and it stems from our organization, BTS Spark, being a not-for-profit. We've coached 22,000 school leaders. So you can imagine in that period of time, we've built up a lot of insights around the day-to-day realities and the challenges and the struggles that school leaders in different contexts, in different school environments, at different levels of seniority, the kinds of challenges they're facing, and also what insights they glean from coaching, the practical tools and strategies that we can share with them that really help to lift their leadership and find new approaches to what felt like intractable problems. So having done this work over a decade, we felt that we wanted to find a way of sharing it with many, many more school leaders who maybe have never experienced coaching. And we wanted to share it in an authentic way. So what we didn't want to do is write a theoretical book about leadership. Instead, what we did is we took the records of coaching conversations, which have been anonymized, and started getting curious about what are the themes that are coming out from all the different coaching conversations. So we did this analysis and identified the top 9 challenges that school leaders are facing. And it's fair to say that in recent years, leading schools has become more challenging, more complex, more unpredictable. The environment has become more uncertain. There have been various curveballs thrown. So we wanted to capture that. And we could see these big challenges emerging as themes from our coaching session notes. And we could see the strategies and tools that our coaches were sharing with school leaders that really helped them to make significant shifts in their leadership practice. So we started writing this up. And the model MESSI kind of fell out. It was an acronym. And we can go through the letters if that's of interest. But overall, what it was showing was that school leaders aren't following a textbook approach, that school leadership is, as we all know, very messy and very unpredictable. And we need to embrace that rather than fight against it. And what that requires of school leaders is an approach that's more collaborative, more emotionally intelligent and self-aware, and more flexible and adaptive, and future-focused as well. So we identified the different elements of that, and we've packaged it kind of nicely in a book with some very practical tools and strategies. And to test it out, what we did is we evolved it with school leaders, where we'd literally write a chapter each month. And at the end of the month, we'd send that chapter out to school leaders. We call them MESSI pioneers. And these were leaders all around the world. They had a month to read the book and then trial the approaches and then give us a feedback. What did they like? What did they not like? What landed? How did they apply the learning?
And then strategy.
So every chapter has been effectively co-written with these school leader MESSI pioneers all around the world. And that really helped us to make it so concrete, and give lots of practical examples about you could use this in this format, in staff meetings, in one-on-ones, in this particular way. Or we had to kind of rewrite chapters to explain concepts better or to prioritize things in different ways. So yeah, the result is a hopefully a book that's been written, you know, from the data from school leaders, but with school leaders and then for school leaders.
What an amazing way to practice what you preach, that collaborative approach. And listen, this is probably why it's so good. As I said, as I was running my eyes through, I was like, yes, yes, everything in here I agree with. And I really can't wait to fully dive into that more, as well as share some of these really great strategies from the book with my school partners, to be able to enhance those many diverse areas of their leadership which require our attention. So wonderful. I would absolutely love for you to spell out that acronym and what it stands for the audience, just so we can give them a bit of an understanding of what to expect if they are so lucky as to get a copy of that book once it's able to be purchased, and those hard copies get off the dock.
Absolutely, absolutely. So MESSI, being an acronym, starts with M, and M is for meaning making. So why is this important? This is about creating a shared sense of purpose across your team, teacher team, your school leadership team, with your community, so that we're clear what we're trying to achieve here for our children. And it sounds simple, but we can lose sight of it in the day-to-day. So meaning-making is critically important. Then when we get a policy directive from central office, then we can make sense of it because we have our own sense of meaning and direction and vision for the school. E stands for emotional connection. And this is about the quality and depth of relationships that you as a leader have, particularly with teacher colleagues and school leadership team colleagues in your school. So the challenge here is, how do you build trust? And the uncommon sense of messy leadership is that keeping things at a surface level, or what we call a culture of nice, keeping everybody happy, is not likely to serve well, because that tends to put under the carpet some of the harder conversations that need to be had in order to improve the quality of teaching, to create consistency of approach across the school. So we talk a lot about feedback in the E chapter, and how do you open up and be more vulnerable and create more trusted relationships.
My neck is sore from nodding. I love this one. We'll circle back to that one when you finish the acronym.
So there are two S's. So S stands for, firstly, sensing the future. And this is about looking ahead, being clear on how do we need to respond as a school. So, for example, I was talking with Canadian school leaders yesterday that where they're vastly oversubscribed in some of the urban schools. So they're needing to offer hybrid learning with children maybe at school in the morning, but not in the afternoon, and doing virtual in the afternoon, because they don't have enough room for the children all to be at school at the same time. So just an example of some extreme circumstances where it's important for us to continually be looking ahead and working towards different approaches, so innovating in different ways. Of course, Simon Breakspeare talks about learning sprints being critical here, so disciplined experimentation being really important, not getting too hidebound by long-term school improvement plans that really tie you down for a long period of time.
I like that one too, when something that I'll hear a lot from leaders is they'll say, like, staff will have a request or some suggestions or some feedback, and you'll often hear leaders being so stuck in how it just can't be done. And I say, well, if you look ahead, sure, it might not be able to be done now, but if your staff are talking about more flexible working options, let's say, or a different way to staff the school, surely you can think, maybe we could do this in 3 years' time after we've finished building the new gymnasium where all of our funds are tied into. But it's definitely worth thinking about, is this something that we can think about to be able to implement in the future? And I bring up flexible working arrangements because with so many schools now opting for this as an option, when our staff in our school hear about something like that, they go, well, we want it. Why don't we have it? It's a real morale, you know, dipper if schools go, well, we just can't do it because of X, Y, and Z. But I always say, is there a way for us to plan for potentially exploring this down the line? So it sounds like it's linked to that same area.
Yes, fantastic. There's a coaching process called Entropy where you deliberately help the other person imagine themselves in the future, in 3 years, 5 years, whatever, and where they would like to be in their role or with their school development or whatever, and then help them plan from there backwards. Because if you always start in the present, then you know of the difficulties and the obstacles and what's in the way, and sometimes it's difficult to even imagine something different.
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry to interrupt you then. It just came to mind as you were talking, and it's such a common one. All right, the next S.
S is on seizing momentum. And this is about how do you support school leaders to prioritize differently, to feel like they're in control of how they spend their time, be more action oriented at times, and to recognize if you're procrastinating, like all of us do it. So what are we losing by putting some important things off again and again, and always slipping down your to-do list? So how can we be more action oriented and prioritize and spend our time wisely on what matters most? And then finally, Y stands for your presence. And sometimes when we're actually coaching people through messy or taking a school through a messy program, we start on the why, because we can be messy, we're allowed to, we've got license. And we start on the why, because this is about you and your leadership. And if you can start by becoming more aware of your impact as a leader, your confidence level and how to build that, how to deal with setbacks and your own personal resilience strategies, then that's an enormous boost, an enormous lift forward if you're trying to drive change. So that's why we'd sometimes suggest you start with the why, which is about your presence or your leadership.
Yeah, it's how wonderful. And I think your thematic analysis really nailed all of those key issues and those themes that many leaders are experiencing within their schools. So what a practical tool. And you're so right, the you and the self-awareness is the key that unlocks the door to everything else. And if we just focus on that in the beginning and get that right, all of the other parts of our leadership, our emotional intelligence, they all begin to fall into place if we practice a sense of self-awareness, both of our internal understanding and then how other people perceive us. Like you said, that whole link to feedback and having a coach like you, yourself or somebody within BTS Spark is going to be incredibly supportive for leaders to be able to enhance their personal and professional development. So how incredible. Now, one of the things that I want to circle back to, because this has been coming up in a couple of my school sessions, in one of the chapters, so under the emotional connection, I think it was, you talk about moving from a culture of nice to a culture of trust. And when you were speaking, I thought, as you were saying, that there's not much, it's a focus on having depth in our connections. And it's so true. I think too often we get caught up in the rapport building and the establishment of trust, but then don't move through the other phases of trust building around maintaining it and then sustaining trust as a collective leadership team. We kind of never get to that point in many schools. So we're establishing rapport and trust in our little pockets across the school, like what I talked about, but then we don't unify the whole team in order to sustain trust of the collective. Can you have a little bit of a chat to our audience about what are some of the mistakes that nice leaders make, and what are your top tips for creating a trusting staff or team culture without becoming an authoritarian or a top-down leader?
Yeah. So we work with a lot of nice leaders. And
me too.
And at one level, that's beautiful, because what nice leaders embody is a real sense of care and responsibility for their teams. So there's a really positive side that you don't want to lose here. But the Achilles heel, if you overplay this, what happens is that it can be exhausting, because you're always trying to keep everybody happy. And of course, people want different things. So keeping lots of different people happy, there are lots of dilemmas in this. And at the end of the day, you end up as not totally genuine. Nobody knows quite what you stand for. And maybe you lack leadership backbone because you never seem to stand up for anything really, or to anybody, and people can take advantage of that. What we encourage instead is to build this culture of trust. And what I mean by that is a culture where, first of all, you as a leader make really strong attempts to help others feel seen, to slow down enough and listen well enough and create enough psychological safety that people from different backgrounds, whether it's teachers, support staff, other leaders in the school, colleagues, parents, students, so that each individual feels that they are seen by you and you've slowed down sufficiently. So it's not all about you and you need to speak at 100 miles an hour and it's all about your communication. That communication's great, but what's more important is that you can slow down and pause and help people feel seen, help people feel heard, listen to them. And then secondly, I think to build deep trusting relationships, you need to role model vulnerability yourself as a leader. So we were talking earlier about how important it is to seek feedback. And when you're asking for feedback from others, you are being vulnerable. You're saying, look, I recognize I'm on a learning journey. I'm not perfect. I would really value hearing from you. What's working and what can I do differently or better to support you? If leaders can do that, then good things will follow from that.
Yeah, and I work too with many nice leaders, and then they talk about the challenge of when they start to put maybe some expectations in place or change the way that they lead, then they don't get the best reaction. And I will, and you might often speak with your leaders about this as well. I say this is where that shared vision and the shared expectations are really important, because the pendulum can swing, can't it, where you kind of you lose this sense of trust and people start behaving differently, and then you swing back in with the proliferation of rules. And I'll always caution against that, because I'll sit in sessions and we go, oh, well, we need to review the code of conduct. I go, whoa, whoa, whoa. We don't want to swing back that way, because then that's communicating a very different message to our staff. It's around, okay, how can we come up with this, first of all, shared vision, and then the norms and our shared roles and responsibilities in getting to that end point. That's a really good first step, because you're communicating very subtly, and then developing our skills as a leader alongside that, and taking again that accountability and ownership for our part in, again, developing a bit of a hunch as to how we've got to where we have today. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's often a big thing when it comes to well-being. When people are focused on well-being, they think they have to be really nice and very accepting of everything. And, you know, there's lots of talk around mental health, which is really important, but we still also have a responsibility, don't we, Rosie, to be really strong leaders, which is to have an instructional focus, to have high expectations, to develop our people. So just because we're focusing on well-being doesn't mean we let those things go. I would actually say that at our core, people are really, really seeking that strong leadership. And when we lose that, that can actually impact well-being and mental health. So it's a fine balance.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
Now, you're a really strong advocate for the power of coaching, particularly as leaders and for leaders. I see coaching falling to the bottom of the priority list in schools, probably for a number of reasons. Why should leaders prioritize coaching opportunities, both for themselves, but also for all of their staff, as you know, as a whole school body?
Good question. So firstly, I think it's important to prioritize it, because there's really good evidence around the quality of school leadership impacting the educational outcomes and the quality of education for children in your school. So if you're going to make a really savvy investment in school improvements, then investing in the quality of school leadership, not only the principal, but leaders at all levels within the school, is a very smart thing to do. I think coaching is particularly impactful as a means of professional development, because it's personalized, because you can go so far in a single hour long coaching conversation. And yet you don't even need to leave your office. You just shut the door. So it's not disruptive for the school. There are no extra costs. You're not going off to a conference with travel and accommodation. And you don't need to have somebody filling in your class if you're teaching and so on. So it's highly impactful. It's very, very targeted. And it's all about you and your challenges. And after an hour, you can find a whole new approach to an issue that you may have been struggling on for months, whether it's yourself or your team.
And I like the idea too, that coaching doesn't just have to be this formal one-on-one relationship. It can be peer feedback. It can be learning walks. There's lots of ways that we can embrace a culture of coaching across the school.
Yes. In fact, we've seen a really big uptake in group coaching. So, of course, we do lots of one-on-one coaching, but group coaching, particularly post-pandemic, has become very popular. Again, it's short, sharp sessions, so typically 90 minutes after school for maybe a team of middle leaders or for school leaders, the school leadership team. And over a period of weeks, maybe with a session a month, you can really move forward and build this collective approach to leadership in your school, build a common language, and also create much stronger, deeper connections amongst the individuals in the team. So there's that peer sharing and the team building aspect too.
I agree. I think it's great for leaders to be able to learn about the diverse skills in their team, because while you might only just touch the surface in the session, if you sort of cue into somebody else who is particularly skilled in that, or who even shares your sentiment and how you're feeling at the moment to an issue, one, you've got a support, or two, you find yourself an informal coach or peer, somebody for peer feedback or peer coaching within those sessions. I couldn't agree with you more, Rosie. I think it's group coaching, particularly for a leadership team, is wonderful. What is one thing that a leader or an aspiring leader could do today to begin embracing messy leadership?
So I think I said before that the why about your presence, your leadership, is actually where it all starts. If I could have done, I'd have actually written the why chapter first in the book, but you can imagine the problem. And then you have to go in order. So I would encourage school leaders or aspiring school leaders to start on themselves. So start to build up a strong sense of self-awareness, just being aware of, for example, what can trigger you, in a typical school day. It might be a particular colleague you find particularly difficult to see eye to eye with. It could be a class that you find difficult to teach. It could be some policy directive that's come down that you disagree with. But starting to be aware of those triggers, and the triggers is going to affect your sense of resourcefulness and your state of mind. So then, having been aware of that, what strategies do you have, even maybe informally, to build up your resilience, to self-regulate around your emotional intelligence? What are you telling yourself if you're triggered? Often you're telling yourself you've got thoughts in your head. We call them self-talk. So maybe starting to try and, if you're smart, can you tune into that self-talk? So, for example, I might be recording a podcast with you, but at the same time, I'm thinking to myself, oh, gosh, you know, I stumble around. I must be coming across as such an idiot. So that'll be an example of self-talk that's going on in my head at the time. And the tricky thing with self-talk, although it's inevitable, is that you end up with these two voices. You've got the voice in your head, and then there's the conversation that you're trying to have with the other person. So to try and start to recognize that self-talk, to calm it down, to help find a more realistic perspective, can help to center you. So you then have enough presence to be open to others more. If you're always in your own head, then it's difficult to listen to others.
The example of the podcast is a really good one. Often I'll do them and go, oh, God, that was terrible. I wasn't clear at all. And then I'll go back and listen. I'm like, oh, no, it was actually fine. It's just the narrative that you run off with in your head. That's a really good one. Rosie, we see a number of quotes circulating on social media showcasing something thought-provoking or inspiring from thought leaders across the globe and throughout time. If a quote from you was circulating on the topic of health, well-being or leadership, what would it say?
Well, I'm not sure. I want to classify myself as a thought leader across the globe.
I disagree.
So one thing that really speaks to me is a little phrase that we have in BTS Spark, and it goes like this: children deserve great leaders. And for me, that really speaks to what we do, why we get up in the morning. It's about serving and supporting school leaders, because they're so critical. And where would you want to invest your efforts in supporting those school leaders? You know, great athletes have coaches, and that's fantastic, and they deserve that. But school leaders deserve to be able to do their best possible work in service of their school communities, because it really directly impacts on children. And so we believe that children deserve great leaders, and we believe that people can become great leaders. It's not like, I don't want people to think, oh, gosh, I'm not a great leader now. Maybe the kids in my school should have a different school leader. That's not the case at all. We believe absolutely firmly that leadership evolves and can become great. And it does tap into a natural leadership style to do that.
Exactly. And that's why I asked those questions early on about how you've evolved as a leader, because here you are in this space coaching leaders right across Australia and across the world, I'm sure, to become better leaders. But we all started somewhere. And leadership is a series of skills to learn, master, refine. And when I work in schools too, my session that we specifically focus on leadership approaches, I guess, and our self-awareness is called Evolve Your Leadership, because we're all at some point in our journey and it's an evolution to that next phase of who we are as a leader. And I loved that quote really links back to the M in messy, finding the meaning. I don't think we do as educators, schools come back to it enough as to why we're here, why we got into this in the first place, and therefore how our skill development or our well-being or our culture influences that. And at the end of the day, when I ask stuff, a lot of the reasons are to help kids, to influence kids, to make a difference in their lives. And we can't do that if we're not our best self. So we always have to come back and anchor to that meaning.
Yeah, that anchoring is so important.
Yeah, and it's the first one. This podcast is aptly titled Well-Led Schools, which is a play on words to reflect those schools who lead with well-being in mind. What is one thing that you think schools or school leaders can do to prioritise well-being that would make the biggest difference in their school?
So I would say they need to role model well-being. So as a leader, really, really important to role model well-being. What does that look like in terms of the different aspects of well-being, my physical well-being, emotional well-being, mental well-being, social well-being, my ability to set boundaries, to not be an absolute workaholic. So if leaders in schools can model well-being personally themselves, then teachers can start to pick up on that and do something similar. And there's really strong research evidence that if adults in the school are modeling well-being, that student well-being often will be enhanced and will flow from that. Whereas if all your teachers are looking hugely stressed, but then they're telling you as a student that you need to have some relaxation techniques, it's not genuine, is it?
Yeah, that's right. Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. When I did my master's, my last unit on the personal attributes of an effective leader, I did my last assignment on well-being, the well-being of leaders and the influence that it has. And you're so right. You hit the nail on the head. There's plenty of evidence to show the flow through from the leaders to the staff to the students. And then, you know, for the community as well. And if we're looking at rewiring a lot of neural pathways in students in the time that they're within our care, we ultimately hold that big responsibility, but it's also something that shifts really quickly, as we were talking about before. That focus on wellbeing has a massive impact on our school community. So within as little as a term or a few weeks, we start to see changes. Mm. Oh, Rosie, today has been absolutely wonderful. Would you mind sharing with the audience if you have a product or a freebie or any resources to share, as well as where they can connect with you if they'd like to engage with you further?
Absolutely, happy to share. So my organisation, BTS Spark, is a not-for-profit. So what we're trying to do is just share some real practical strategies. There's a few ways that school leaders can access those. Of course, they're welcome to buy the book. It's called Embracing Messy Leadership. It's available on Amazon or from ASCD, the publisher. And you can Google BTS Spark Messy Leadership. When you do that Google and get onto our Messy Leadership webpage, what you'll find is that there's also a toolkit that's a set of practical tools, resources, strategies taken straight from the book. There are also a few tools that have been added in there that even aren't in the book, and that's available for free download. Obviously, it helps to have more of an explanation of the tools and to use them in context that would come more from the book. We're also offering coaching programs. You can imagine for individuals, one-on-one coaching, or for teams in schools. We have for group coaching and workshop series on messy leadership, so how to become a messy leader. And I would really encourage people to look at those on btsspark.org/messy leadership, just to support you, because we know that shifting our practice is hard. And if you have a coach supporting you, it can really make all the difference to moving your practice forward. And then lastly, I'd say if you're interested in generally building up your leadership skills and your coaching skills, then you could do worse than following BTS Spark on LinkedIn. There's lots of different hints, tips and strategies recorded weekly there. And also we have free webinars with different thought leaders like Michael Fullan and John Hattie and Patti Salberg and others, all freely available on our LinkedIn and our YouTube.
How amazing. And yes, I would strongly advocate for connecting with BTS Spark to be able to support yourself as a leader and your leadership team to enhance the well-being and the culture of your school, and of course the overall school performance, which is what we're all in this game for, not for so much for the results, but for the students themselves. So thank you so much for your time today, Rosie. It's been absolutely wonderful, and I feel like my brain is fuller than it was when we started this conversation, and I can't wait to properly digest the book. Thank you so much for your time.
It was great talking to you. Good luck. Embrace the messy.
Thank you. Thank you again for joining me for another insightful episode of the Well-Led Schools podcast. The show notes for this episode, complete with information and links to connect with Rosie, are available wherever you're listening to this podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and please leave a review if you haven't already. If you're interested in upskilling your leadership team so that they can be better attentive to the needs of the staff and your school, I invite you to explore our Well-Led Schools Partnership Program, where we work together to unearth your school's real challenges, collaborate with your team, and co-create a shared vision that places well-being at the forefront of your school's culture. We'll elevate your leaders and staff's potential with targeted professional development, and we build a tailored staff wellbeing framework and action plan based on your school's very specific needs. Doors to the program only open once a term, so if they're closed when you're listening to this episode, be sure to get on the wait list by visiting adriannehornby.com.au/school-partnerships. Thanks so much for listening to Well-Led Schools. I look forward to connecting with you at adriannehornby.com.au. Here you can get in contact with me, learn more about my approach, and join my mailing list. I'm Adrienne Hornby. Thanks again for your time, and stay well.